Haramai, good morning. This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Moramai, Blenvainor, and welcome to the first At Your Service for a brand new year. This is Judith Leigh wishing you a happy and healthy new year, a year that's as special as you are. I hope you're enjoying this very lively instrumental version of the popular carol Ding Dong Merrily on High, chosen specially because today we're going to talk about bells. I thought it'd be a good topic for our first programme of 2022, as bells are so often associated with welcoming in the new year. Maybe you listened to the chimes of Big Ben at midnight on New Year's Eve and made your wishes for the coming year. Or maybe the sound of a peal of church bells holds special nostalgic memories for you. Or maybe, like me, you've wondered why bells have become so full of history and tradition. Well, my special guest this morning has all manner of knowledge to share on the subject. But before we start talking about bells, let's meet him. He's an Anglican priest, Father Michael Bryden, and in addition to his role as Bishop Peter's chaplain, can often be found helping out taking services in churches around the island, especially in Douglas and the north. So, Father Michael Bryden, good morning and welcome. And tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I really grew up in Norwich. That's where my parents still are. I was there until 18, when I went off to university in Durham, went on to theological college, and then I functioned as a priest down in Sussex for about 20 years. Last 12 years in two rural parishes, Catsfield and Crowhurst in East Sussex.
Your call to the church, was it always simmering there, or was there a moment when the lights went on and you thought, this is what I should be doing?
I remember 9 years old thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to be like the local vicar. I decided not to tell anybody else that because I thought it might be a bad move at school. I always said I was going to work in a museum because I'd always been mad about history, but it was just a call which got stronger and stronger, and it was the fact that other people just assumed that's what I was going to do. So I offered myself for ministry in my mid-20s.
It also says a lot about your local vicar, doesn't it, that there must have been something in the way he lived that was attractive even to a youngster.
I think he was just a very caring man.
Very caring. Whatever else a priest is, you have got to really care. You've got to get alongside people. That's really the essence of your ministry, isn't it?
You try to love everybody you meet. You try and value that individual. Sometimes it's very easy to love somebody. Sometimes you ask for a bit more grace to manage it. But you do try and see every human being you encounter as being precious to God, and therefore you treat them as being precious. I was very happy in parish life, church life. I always felt very welcome, very included. It was a very safe and happy place for me.
Now, in a couple of rural parishes, your last appointment, was that in any way what attracted you to the island? Or I suppose the roundabout question is, what drew you to the island? What appealed to you about coming here?
I'd never set foot on the Isle of Man until February, when I finally got here. I'd always been fascinated by the existence of the Isle of Man, this ancient island with its ancient parliament in the middle of the Irish Sea, something totally unique, and I'd always fancied the idea of visiting the Isle of Man. It was a plus point when I got interviewed. I got interviewed on Zoom, knowing about rural life and small towns. But I got asked, what experience have you got of that sort of background? And I said, that's really been where my ministry's always been. So they said, well, that may be a plus point on the Isle of Man.
Very definitely so. Of course, it was a really tricky time for you because you were applying and being interviewed, as you said, by Zoom. It was when we were really in the grip of the pandemic and coming over was impossible. So it was all a bit difficult for you, wasn't it? And there were a lot of delays.
It wasn't the easiest period of life. I got interviewed, accepted the job in July 2020, told everybody I was leaving in August 2020 and was still there in December, months after I should have gone, before I finally moved here in the February. It certainly dragged on. That was nobody's fault, but it certainly added a dynamic to it.
You touched on your love of history, lifelong love of history. Is that something that you look forward to exploring more as you get more opportunity to do that?
I certainly love the history which goes with the Isle of Man, and I have had the privilege of exploring quite a lot. I found it very helpful when somebody said to me, imagine a map of the British Isles, you know, including Ireland, then put your finger at the centre, and that is roughly where the Isle of Man is. And when you realise what a central position the Isle of Man has in the history of the British Isles, you can see why it's been so important in maritime history. You can see why it's been so important in church history.
My guest this morning is Anglican priest Father Michael Bryden, talking there a little about his background and his call to ministry. Some music from the Choir Boys now takes us into today's topic, and it's all about those bells.
Ding dong, merrily on high, in the bells are ringing. Ding dong, verily the sky is ringed with angels singing.
One of our very popular Christmas carols, Ding Dong Merrily on High. Well, we're all familiar with bells heralding the start of a new year. But what else might we know about them?
A lot of you probably listened to Big Ben bringing in the new year. But just remember, there's four smaller bells come before Big Ben strikes. You know, they play the so-called Westminster chimes. I'm not absolutely certain, but I do think St. German's Cathedral in Peel seems to play Westminster chimes every quarter of an hour. So if you want to listen to it, go there. But there is actually a prayer which goes with the Westminster chimes, which I think is inscribed around the tower at Westminster. It's a good prayer for the start of a new year. All through this hour, Lord, be my guide, and by thy power no foot shall slide. Bells do have quite a link with the new year. Charles Dickens wrote that famous novel, A Christmas Carol, less well known these days. He wrote one for New Year called The Chimes, or to give it its full story, a goblin story of some bells that rang an old year out and a new year in. I mean, it's all about aiming a blow for the poor. You know, Dickens thought he redeemed Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. In The Chimes, he wanted to get a whole nation to take the poor seriously. And interestingly, the book's divided into three quarters after the quarter chimes of a striking clock. If you fancy a lighter read, I recommend reading the Dorothy L. Sayers' The Nine Tailors, which is a murder mystery book set around ringing in the new year down in East Anglia. The Nine Tailors is the term for a passing bell when somebody's died. Nine tailors, that's three groups of three, shows that it's a man who's died. If it was a woman, be two groups of three. If it be a child, be one group of three. Remember number of years of that person afterwards. And when you're living in a very settled rural community, that was the best way of passing out the news, because everybody could work out the gender of the person who died and roughly who it was likely to be.
So, bells blessed by prayer, greeting the new year and passing information round rural communities. But I wondered, are there any Bible references to bells?
You do get bells mentioned properly once in the Bible, in the book of Exodus, and it's described how the priest, the high priest at the temple, has to wear little bells around the hem of his robes. So, you know, when he moves in them, there's a sort of tinkling noise of the bells moving. Now, there is a practical reason for wearing those bells. Once a year, the high priest had to go into the most sacred part of a temple, known as the Holy of Holies, through a curtain. So sacred, nobody else went in it except once a year. It was considered, you remember, direct presence of God. Now, the high priest had to prepare very carefully, go through all sorts of rituals to make sure he was in a state of perfection when he went in there. The fear was, if he wasn't in a state of perfection, he might offend God and find his life was forfeit. So if the high priest lost his life in there, they knew they had to get him out again. So he always went in with a rope tied round his leg so they could pull him out. Well, how did they know if he was still alive when he was on the other side of a curtain? Because if he was moving around, the bells were tinkling all the time, so they knew he was fine. I don't believe there are any accounts of any high priest actually having to be yanked out of a Holy of Holies, so I think they all survived. But that does mean if the ringing of the bells shows you're okay, it shows that you're being blessed by God, you're acceptable by God, you're loved by God. So when we're ringing church bells today, heralding the new year in a church context, it says a lot about being loved and worthy and valued by God. Certainly a lot of ritual grows up over bells. In my last parish, Catsfield, in East Sussex, we had seven bells. Now, two of them were medieval bells. They would have gone through a ceremony known as the baptism of bells, which means washing and anointing them and giving them names. I'm far from an expert on the baptism of bells. My understanding is there's a ceremonial washing both inside and outside. And the bells also have to be anointed with specially blessed oil. They also have to be formally named, which almost gives the bell a sort of godparent in doing that. Gabriel is a very popular name because that had a particular purpose. You get a lot of Mary bells. That actually seems to have carried on remarkably a post-Reformation as well. Names, by and large, die out after the 16th century. You're more likely to find inscriptions, biblical texts and the like, or indeed the names of the donors onto the bell. I had two bells with names, one called Gabriel and one called Catherine. The one called Gabriel is named after the archangel Gabriel, you know, the one who came to visit the Blessed Virgin Mary to ask her to be the mother of God's son. And we think the Gabriel bell was probably rung three times a day for saying a prayer called the Angelus. Angelus from the word angel, which recalls that visit. It also would have been a good way of people telling the time in the fields, because three times a day, you know, tell them roughly when it's morning, evening and lunchtime. Bells are supposed to be rung in every Anglican church to summon people to worship. I mean, it says in the Book of Common Prayer and in canon law, which is the legal code of law for the church, you should have at least one bell which is rung. Now, on the Isle of Man, I think most churches do only have one bell. There are some exceptions. You've got rings of bells at the cathedral and at St. George's, and you've got bells you can certainly chime at St. Thomas's, but usually it's one bell. Although that hasn't stopped people being romantic and enthusiastic about them. When I first got to the Isle of Man, it was said to me, you better learn the national anthem. Well, my way of learning things is to still buy it on a CD. And listening to it on a CD, of course, I listened to a lot of other things as well. And I got very used to hearing this song, this rather romantic ballad about somebody recalling the days of his youth, listening to the sounds of the bells of old Kirkbraddon. So there's all that romance which goes with the bells too.
Oh, may the music never cease, nor that ending.
Emigrant looks back with nostalgia to his youth spent within the sound of the bells of old Kirkbraddon. Words by James Sutherland, music by Miss M.L. Wood, and sung there by Graham Crowe.
John Betjeman was very keen on bell ringing, loved the sound of bells. Yes, they certainly appear in an awful lot of his poems, and his verse autobiography, Summoned by Bells, shows how important they are. And loved a bit in that where he says on Sunday nights in London, he would follow a different bell to whichever church was having an evening service and take himself down there. I grew up, as I've said, in Norwich, and I really enjoy his 1970s programme about church life in Norwich. And there's a lovely little vignette where he meets an old bell ringer there who just enthuses like mad about what the bells mean to him. Do you mind, Judith, if I have a go at just reading this? This is from a man called Billy West, who's been 60 years a ringer. I'll have a go at the Norfolk accent. Ah, that's music in your ear. That's music in the ear. Once that gets hold of you, I suppose that's like smoking cigarettes. Once that gets a hold of you, that's a drug you can't get rid of. There's something about it. I don't know what it is, but you go anywhere for it. If there weren't somewhere where there were some bells, I'd go crazy. I know I should. Bells are life to me. I mean, it never seems a Sunday to me if we don't hear the bells. That never seems Sunday if you can't hear church bells going. Well, I think I'd probably share his enthusiasm for the bells. I mean, all those years I had in Durham, it was fairly amazing hearing those cathedral bells ringing on a Sunday afternoon. And when they'd finished a bit later on, the bells of one of the parish churches on the other side of the river would start off. Might have been purgatory for those who didn't like the sound, but I really enjoyed hearing them. A reassuring sound to me.
My guest this morning is Anglican priest Father Michael Bryden, sharing his appreciation of bells. Well, we've talked quite a bit about church bells, but what about ship's bells?
Oh yes, I got up very close to becoming a naval chaplain. I remember doing a tour of a ship, and there was this curious wooden contraption, looked a bit like a tripod, hanging on the back of the chaplain's door, his cabin. And he said, what do you think that is? Well, none of us got it right. It was a contraption for putting the ship's bell in, for turning it upside down, because there was a naval custom of using a ship's bell for doing baptisms, christenings in. And if you look at a ship's bell, quite often it's got the name of name of the people who've been baptised inscribed on the edge of it. All sorts of customs as well to do with ship's bells for the new year. You have to ring a ship's bell normally every half an hour. Well, for the new year, you ring the bell 8 times for the old year and 8 times for the new year.
Virgin Mary.
very much like that carol. I saw three ships, so I'm really pleased we've had it this morning. And we've got it in because of that reference to bells ringing, which may be a reference to all those ship bells ringing. It's an odd carol in one sense because, of course, Bethlehem is landlocked. I mean, no ship could sail to Bethlehem. It's a complete impossibility. I think the ships are probably symbolic. Some people suggest they're ships of the desert. You know, camels could be relating to the wise men, the magi, riding in, which could, of course, mean they'd have camel bells on them. My feeling is they probably relate to the three persons of the Trinity, and that's what it's celebrating, the remarkable voyage from heaven of God to earth.
But bells are not just confined to church towers. In other traditions around the world, they can be used in a very different way.
Bells certainly are worldwide. One of the more unusual uses of bells I've come across is in eastern Turkey. I went to visit a group of Christians called the Syriacs. Syriac is a version of Aramaic. Aramaic is the language Christ spoke, so they're ancient. You know, the Lord's Prayer in Syriac, it starts off a boom de bashmire. That's probably the way Jesus started it. But anyway, the Syriacs, one of the few churches which still use bells big time in their worship. They've got something which is called a fan, a liturgical fan, which is meant to resemble angels rustling their wings at particularly sacred moments. It's like a long pole with a metal disc on the end, with an angel imprinted on it, and lots of tiny bells around the edge of that disc. All these little bells ring. I've actually brought one along, which I'm going to give a demonstration of to you. If you were at a Syriac church, you'd hear that noise again and again at particularly sacred moments. There's certainly a sense of awe and wonder when you're worshipping in an ancient language, often in an ancient building. And in my case, the first time I heard them, I was out in the middle of a desert monastery, and it was just, very moving, felt very rooted, felt very ancient and very powerful. I do find it extraordinary that there are still people using the Aramaic language today.
Michael, it's been really enjoyable to learn so much from listening to you. But of course, the inevitable question is, are you a bell ringer yourself?
I'm ashamed to say I'm a lapsed learner. I did start learning to ring. I got no further than rounds, which is very basic change ringing. I've got various ringing enthusiasts as friends. They did give me the bell ringer's bedside companion, which is like a ringing Bible. I do have it upstairs, but I have to confess that I primarily use it because of the excellent three chapters on how to organise a ringing tea, which tells you about every practicality you might want to know in church catering. What is the most useful item you must take with you to a strange kitchen? Well, the answer, according to this book, is a small rubber ball, because there might be a plug missing from the sink, and that's the only way you're going to plug it. Reasonably handy rule of thumb: if you supply each person to have the equivalent of 1 1/4 full rounds of sandwiches made with medium sliced bread and 2 1/2 cakes or pieces of cake, you're going to cover it.
Well, Michael, there's a little gem of knowledge that's well worth treasuring. My guest this morning, sharing his knowledge and his evident appreciation of bells, is Anglican priest Father Michael Bryden, chaplain to Bishop Peter. As we stand on the threshold of a new year, moving on from a year that's been full of challenges and new situations, I wonder, Michael, if you've a thought that you'd like to share with us.
I'd really like to read you a little bit from Minnie Louise Haskins, a writer from the first half of the 20th century. She settled eventually in Crowborough, East Sussex, which is not a million miles away from where I lived. I'm sure a lot of people will recognise the words. They were made particularly famous by King George VI at the start of the Second World War. "And I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, 'Give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown.' And he replied, 'Go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than the known way.' So I went forth, and finding the hand of God, trod gladly into the night. and he led me towards the hills and the breaking of day in the lone east.
The Lord is my light and my salvation. The music there of Margaret Ritzer. And my thanks to my guest today, Bishop's chaplain and bell-ringing enthusiast, Father Michael Bryden. And now let's take a look at our notice board. This evening in St Luke's Church in Baldwin, there'll be a service of 9 lessons and carols starting at 6:30. And a reminder that the very popular Christmas tree parade in Christchurch in Laxey will continue into early January, with the church open daily from 10 until 4. The trees are very clever and very attractive, well worth a visit if you're in the area. But sadly, something that's had to be cancelled is the Epiphany service planned for next Sunday afternoon at St Adamnan's, Lonnon Old Church. Unfortunately, the building is just too small to allow public worship with the suitable social distancing that's recommended at this present time. And we go into the new year with a busy week in St Thomas's Church in Finch Road, here in the heart of Douglas. St Thomas's Craft Group meets at 2 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, and then on Friday the 7th, there's coffee and chat in the church from 10:30, and then at noon on Friday, St Thomas's very popular lunches will be served there between noon and 1:30, with a warm welcome for all. Café Lingo will be reopening next Saturday, January the 8th. Lessons for anyone for whom English is not their first language will be from 10:15 until 11:45 on Saturday mornings in the top hall of the Promenade Methodist Church here on Douglas Promenade. All are welcome, refreshments are offered, and it's free. Karen and her team look forward to seeing existing students again, as well as welcoming new students who want to improve their English, make new friends, and learn about life on the Isle of Man. If you'd like to know more, phone or text Karen on 458 340. 458 340. And that's all that we have time for now. But there'll be more notice board news tonight on Sundown, so do please join me if you can tonight at 9 for a mix of easy listening music to round off your weekend. And do please email me if you've got items for the notice board or you'd like to request a favourite hymn to be included in a future programme. My email is judithleigh@manxradio.com. So till whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week. And for the year ahead, in words from a traditional Manx New Year blessing, here's health and peace, an age of life and happiness forever. Bye-bye for now. The Nation Station.